On the line at the moment, we have Chloe Fragas, who is from the National Justice Project. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Chloe.
Good morning, Sonia. Thank you for having me.
I hope I pronounced your name properly there.
Oh, yes. No, all good, all good.
Excellent. Now, first of all, before we start, I'm sure that most listeners to our show already know a bit about the National Justice Project. But could you just tell us a bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So the National Justice Project has been around for roughly 10 years, and we are a non-for-profit strategic law firm that uses litigation to try and dismantle and fight against systemic discrimination and racism as well. And from this work in the courtroom, we also take on advocacy and innovative projects to essentially carry that message out into the community, but also give people options to keep fighting injustice in everyday lives.
And I think, I mean, when I think about you, I definitely think about death in custody as being a major focus of the work that you do. Is that mm-hmm. accurate?
That is accurate. So a lot of our work has been around police and prison reform. We are extremely privileged to be entrusted by families to take on fights for injustice and try to get a bit of justice. And unfortunately, a lot of the times this is seen in prison spaces, but also in police actions or inactions. And this has been also disproportionately against First Nations people. And why we do this work is to try and reduce these numbers and ultimately also prevent the same thing happening to other people around death in custody as well.
Great. It's great work that you do. Now, the reason that we've got you on today is to talk about the Alternative First Responders project that mm-hmm. you've put together and the updates with that. But to begin with, what is the idea of an Alternative First Responder network? What does that mean?
Yes. Well, the beauty of an Alternative First Responder network is that it is so diverse in what it can achieve and also quite limitless in terms of the actual makeup of it. But in essence, it's a framework that is moving away from the use of law enforcement. And it's about having a response system or an alternative response system to when people need either crisis support, or it could just be, look, this is happening in my community and I don't know who to call, but I know I'm not the right person to deal with this right now, mm-hmm. or just concerned for a loved one or family member. And having people that are highly skilled, highly trained in things like de-escalation, in care, in both therapeutic support, also just really practical skills, and having people not only highly trained in these sorts of areas, but often people connected to community. So it could be, you know, titles such as outreach workers, peer workers, mental health clinicians, or it could be a combination of both. But what it is about is making sure that when there is a call for help, as opposed to reacting with a law enforcement response when there's absolutely no need for it to be that way, for that call, that we have the right people responding at the right time to get the right help to people in need.
And what is the problem that's driving this? What's the need out there? Why would this be what is this an appropriate solution to?
Yes. Oh, at the moment, we are seeing that there is a critical gap in often people in our communities needing supports at the moment because of the chronic underinvestment in social and community sectors. Often when people need that extra support or after our support, the only real solution is to often call 000 or other people call 000 on behalf of others. It's not always people calling it themselves. And at the moment, the options are pretty limited and police are being used as a default first responder or a last resort or of care as well. And from this, police are not equipped culturally or often structurally to deliver the right response. And so we see, you know, police attending call-outs and there could be results in escalating situations into crisis that weren't originally crisis, police acting on confirmation bias, misreading behaviour or reluctance to engage as threats, or also just the increase of risk of harm to the community because there is access to weapons and lethal force in that response, when there just is often absolutely no need to have access to lethal force in that moment.
Now, I was struck by some of the both the case studies and the statistics that are in the position paper that you've put together. So I'm just there was a statistic in there that 43% of critical incidents involving serious injury or death of a person interacting with the police involved an individual experiencing a mental health crisis. Can you explain? So you've said a bit about that police aren't the best people, but why are police, apart from the fact that they've got the weapons there, are there any other systemic factors about why police are not the best people to be responding to individuals with a mental health crisis, and particularly to First Nations people who might call upon the police?
Yes, so what we're seeing as well is that often whether it's because there's a lack of training or not enough training, but also when we have limited representation within the police force, what people are able to respond.
Sorry, could you talk a bit about that limited representation in the police force? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think in the report, one of the statistics is that in Victoria, for example, it's still, I believe, and I might have to check my own
90%?
Yes, 90% of police officers still identify as cis white men. So I think, obviously, in terms of a culture that is, I wouldn't say reflective of our current communities, and this without, adequate oversight or training. And also, I think, in terms of culturally, we've had, like the work we do at the National Justice Project, coronial inquests around people that have been harmed by police. And it is clear that often there's just a real mismatch of understanding of issues such as mental health or any other sort of understanding around people that are often having police called against them. And I think it's this mismatch that is causing ultimately harm at the end of the day. And the Royal Commission into Exploitation and Disability had similar recommendations that there's often not just police unable to identify disabilities, but also a reluctance to believe that there is a disability as well. So clearly there's, whether it's a training question or not, a mismatch in understanding and then not able to deliver the right response because of it.
I mean, just to read again a little bit from the report, it's not only that police are insufficiently trained to respond to the situation, but they were also unwilling to listen to or work with people who had experienced supporting individuals. So it's not just that they lack the training, it's also that they don't recognise the expertise of others.
It seems. Yes, and I think you might be referring to the coronial inquest of the late Mr. Todd McKenzie.
Indeed.
And what the coroner came out with that was that in that moment where there could have been opportunities to engage with family or others, the choice was not to.
Now, what would an alternative first responders network, or what are the models that have been used elsewhere in terms of an alternative first responders network?
So this is something that, people are, and what we recognise in our position paper, and especially in the context of Australia, we fully recognise First Nations communities have been resisting and building networks around how to keep community safety in a way that works best for community. But in terms of those really well-supported frameworks where there is the inclusion of a diversionary program when people do call 000, the best examples are coming out of both the United States and Canada. And where programs have existed for over a decade now, what it looks like is people can call for help. And then there's, depending on your local council area, different programs and different options. Again, it's not so much a one-size-fits-all, but it's extended funding to often community-led and run services that have people that are well connected with the community, are highly trained in what they do, and then they are available most often, but not always, for later hours or 24/7, and then they can respond to the call out if this the triage assessment is, believe that they're better responders as well. But what makes these programs so great is that often part of being part of a community-run organisation, there's proactive outreach as well. So side by side, we have proactive outreach occurring, and then when there's the need for extra support, that can also occur as well.
So what would happen if, let's say that I'm experiencing domestic violence and I call 000, what would be the journey from there if there was an appropriate alternative first responder network in my area?
And being honest, in terms of examples in the position paper, with domestic and family violence, that one's a little bit trickier in terms of, at the moment and in Australia, people reporting, there's an underreporting of domestic and family violence because of the current framework in responding. But yep. In terms of what an alternative could look like, it is possibly having a outreach worker come out, or an outreach worker with a medic worker as well. And then there's also opportunities to work with both the user of violence and the person experiencing violence to try and have a solution that recognises first and foremost the safety of the person experiencing violence, and what does that look like being led by them as well, without necessarily needing to do a law enforcement response either, but having the opportunity to connect to a law enforcement response if they wish to do so as well.
So it would basically be prioritising the health and of the person that was making the call, but also providing them access to those legal responses if they need them. Is that?
Yes. That's correct.
Is there any way that listeners could find out more or to support the initiative? Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. So we now have, which is very exciting, in the last 2 weeks, a live website. Unfortunately, it's a long title, but www.alternativefirstresponders.com.au.
We will put that link in the show notes so that people don't need to type it all in.
And then that way we have a frequently asked questions section, similar to a lot of the questions you've asked this morning, and ways people can take actions. We've had a lot of positive and overwhelming responses from our pledge page, where people can write comments about why this campaign is important to them. And clearly there's absolutely an appetite from the community that what they're seeing they don't believe is the right response, and they want something better for each other as well.
Great. And is there any last bits of wisdom that you would like to share?
I think a lot of the time, a lot of people are desiring better outcomes and are wanting to do, good things for their community. And I think as what we put in our position paper, our strength is our diversity and our resilience as communities. And I think the more we have these conversations and more we open up these conversations, I have no doubt that action will flow from there. So, keep talking about the need to have alternatives, because the more we talk about it, hopefully we get closer to having better frameworks out there for the right response.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us, Chloe. And please, we would love to hear any updates, because I think this is such an important project that could really change the way in which we think about community, as well as the way in which we interact with each other and things like that. So it'd be great to have you on again if you're open to that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sonia. And yes, and also if people are interested, they can also go to the National Justice Project to learn about other cases and projects that are happening at the moment as well.
Great. I'll put both of those links into our show notes. And that was Chloe Fragas, who is the campaign lead for the Alternative First Responders Program at the National Justice Project.